You're listening to an event podcast from the Brookings Institution. For more in-depth discussion with Brookings experts, subscribe to the Brookings Cafeteria Podcast, also on iTunes and on our website at brookings.edu/BCP.
Today we have a very exciting program. As you well know, economic assistance has been a centerpiece of Japan's engagement with the world for the past 60 years. And now very important changes are in store for this central element in Japan's foreign policy. Just 3 days ago, Japan's cabinet approved a revised charter for official development assistance. This charter is very important because it sets out the philosophy, the principles, and the implementation guidelines of Japan's development aid. The revision of the ODA, or Official Development Assistance Charter, is part of a broader redirection in Japan's foreign policy that seeks a more active role for Japan in world affairs. This policy was launched by Prime Minister Abe and is known as proactive pacifism. This policy was fleshed out in Japan's first ever national security strategy launched in December 2013, which explicitly called for a more strategic utilization of ODA. The changes to the charter are far from cosmetic. They actually are significant enough, and they required a change, coining a new name for the charter. Now it's known as the Development Cooperation Charter. This means, of course, that our Twitter hashtag now has to be changed, but please feel free to use it during the event. We have Japan ODA as our Twitter hashtag. There are many novel elements in the charter that we're going to discuss this morning. For instance, the introduction of the notion of quality growth, the concern with helping countries that face special vulnerabilities, such as the middle income trap or disasters brought about by climate change, allowing the disbursement of aid to boost the law enforcement capabilities of countries to promote maritime safety, or to foreign militaries when they engage in non-military operations, such as disaster relief. The call for greater synergy between ODA and private flows, and a more explicit articulation that development assistance is both a contribution to the world and a strategic tool to ensure Japan's national interest, such as peace, prosperity, and an international order based on universal values. We have a very distinguished set of panelists to help us understand better the new direction of Japan's development aid. Let me introduce them briefly in the order in which they will make their presentations. Ambassador Kimihiro Ishikane is the Director General of the International Cooperation Bureau of Japan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and prior to this, he was Japan's ambassador to ASEAN. Professor Taizo Yakushiji is Professor Emeritus at Keio University, Visiting Professor of the National Graduate Institute for Policy Studies, and Board Member of the Institute for International Policy Studies. Professor Yakushiji led the advisory panel on revisions to the ODA Charter. And Mr. Hiroshi Kato is Vice President of the Japan International Cooperation Agency, JICA, who I'm sure you all know is a premier agency for administering Japan's development assistance. So really a terrific group of panelists for all of us this morning. Through these presentations, we will be able to understand the role that development aid plays in Japan's policy of proactive pacifism, the process by which the charter was revised, and the extent to which the new charter will influence the way in which economic assistance is implemented. So I would like then, without further ado, to ask Ambassador Ishikane to please come to the podium and get us started. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think you covered almost all the points which I'm going to make. So, well, 60 years have passed since Japan has started its ODA, Official Development Assistance, And our economic cooperation through ODA has made a significant contribution to the peace and stability of international community in the Pacific, African continent, and Middle East, etc. And our efforts are, of course, just a part of, and tiny part of all the efforts of many countries and people, United States in particular, but have made a significant difference in lifting quite a few number of people out of poverty and in putting many countries on the course of economic growth. And this year marks the 70th anniversary of the end of last war for Japan, and I think much will be debated, discussed on the way we have come along and where we are going. But in my current capacity, I think I can safely say that we are proud of our development cooperation contribution to the international community through peaceful means, something that symbolizes Japan's post-war diplomacy. We have produced results and made difference. Of course, I think I have to be fair. Our development cooperation was not solely intended to be charity or philanthropy activities. Our contribution through ODA has at the same time greatly contributed to secure diplomatic environments favorable to Japan. ODA has been and continues to be in that sense an extremely important diplomatic tools. As you see, ODA has been useful in preparing favorable economic environment of Japan economy by assisting a basic education in many developing nations and offering technical cooperation. We have contributed to capacity building in those nations, and we have assisted in constructing basic economic infrastructure such as roads, bridges, ports, power plants, and so forth. And the basic economic infrastructure, together with basic education, paved way for economic growth through domestic investment and prepared terrain for foreign direct investment, including that from Japan. And investment, especially in manufacturing field, creates employment. And the employment produces income and consumption, and that leads to economic growth. This kind of virtuous cycle is what happened in Asia. Asia that now offers enormous economic opportunity for Japan as a growing market and as a favorite destination of investment. Number two, it's about security. ODA has been useful in securing favorable security environment for Japan. Well, because needless to say, Japan-U.S. alliance and other alliance networks U.S. has established in the region has been a cornerstone of security environment that continue to assure predictability in Asia-Pacific. But we need to recognize at the same time economic cooperation that Japan, United States, Australia, and other donor countries and institutions have extended to Asia contributed greatly to assure economic growth of recipient countries, and thereby contributed to the relative social and political stability. And social and political stability of Asia, especially in Southeast Asia, is critically important for Japan, as you see here on the map, as it's, you know, Japan's major sea lane of communication, transporting more than 85% of imported petroleum, passes through the region. And we should remember that Asia region is the place that counts largest number of Muslim population in the world. Number three, it's about soft power. ODA has been useful in promoting Japan's soft power. Of course, economic cooperation is not all about delivering assistance to the people in need. Technical cooperation through dispatching volunteers, experts, or inviting trainees not only contributes to the capacity building, but also to networking friendship among people and to promoting our image in the country. We have sent more than 40,000 young volunteers in more than 80 countries all over the world since 50 years ago. Our youth volunteer system that took after U.S. Peace Corps makes 50th anniversary this year. People in developing countries see the image of Japan or the United States through the people they work with. So our cooperation and on basic economic infrastructures are also remembered, especially when it leads to economic growth of the recipient country. So now I'd like to talk a little bit about the revision of ODA Charter. Well, I have briefly sketched the history of Japanese ODA and its role in Japanese diplomacy. These Japanese ODA activities have been directed by what we call ODA Charter, a document that set forth our ODA philosophy, principles, and guidelines. The Charter was first adopted in 1992, revised 2003, and its second revision has just finished Tuesday this week. It's so brand new. We started the process March last year, as we thought it's high time to revisit this basic document for a couple of reasons. Reason number one, Japanese ODA is now expected to play diverse roles, not limited to poverty eradication per se. Japanese national security strategy, which Dr. Solis mentioned, adopted December 2013, asks ODA to play its role in securing favorable and secure international environment for Japan. And Japan Revitalization Strategy, also adopted by the government in June 2013, says ODA should be used to help revitalize Japanese economy through promoting economic development of international community. Reason number two, new development agenda post-2015 is ahead of us. Various discussions are actually underway on post-MDGs post-2015. Though, of course, we cannot tell the outcome of those discussions, our new charter has to demonstrate our determination and readiness to cope with this international challenge. Third, last but not least, we need to take into consideration the growing role of non-ODA in economic development, a dramatic change we are recently witnessing in the international arena. As a matter of fact, say 10 or 15 years ago, the most major part of the money which is inflowing into the developing world was ODA. But nowadays, 2.5 or the 3 times as much money is coming from private sector into the developing world. So how to, you know, liaise, how to make the best use of ODA as a catalyzer to this, you know, private money is a new challenge. So now I'd like to briefly touch upon some new important elements of our new charter. Well, first of all, the change of the name. We have decided to change the name from ODA Charter to Development Cooperation Charter, and this for 3 reasons. Reason number one, we cannot talk about economic development by limiting our focus only on ODA. Our focus should be broadened. More and more private resource, as I said earlier, is flowing into developing countries in terms of investment, and that resource is promoting growth. So we need to think about how we can mobilize the private sector resources to the development in an appropriate manner. Reason number two, Japan should not necessarily limit its assistance to those duck-listed countries. Some countries, such as small islands, like those in Caribbean Sea, enjoy relatively high per capita income, and thus have graduated or will soon be graduating from duck list. But those countries face, however, particular vulnerability due to climate change or natural disaster and has to address income gap. Japan should be able to cooperate with those countries if we consider necessary, regardless where those countries are listed, either or not those countries are listed in duck list. Reason number three, ODA. The denomination ODA, terminology ODA stands for Official Development Assistance. Of course, some countries do still need pure assistance, but others are gradually growing on their own. For the latter kind of countries, it would no longer be assistance, but partnership that are needed. Assistance is not always a word appropriate to describe our relationship with developing countries. And about some contents of the new charter. New charter clarifies some basic policies of developing corporations. Number one, our cooperation is to contribute to peace and stability through non-military measures. Japanese government promotes the idea of proactive contribution to peace, the current Abe government. If active cooperation with United States and other strategic partners in security field including preparation for the eventual exercise of the rights of collective self-defense, is a major agenda of Abe government. Economic cooperation has been and continues to be another major pillar of a proactive contribution to secure stable and peaceful diplomatic environment through non-military measures. So this has been the symbol of a post-war diplomacy and continues to be so. Number two, promoting human security. And human security continues to be one of our basic policies on cooperation. Although a growing number of developing countries enjoy relatively high economic growth recently, there exist pockets of places where people are in dire need for basic service, food, water, etc., and are not able to have hope for tomorrow. Even in countries registering in relatively high economic growth, some people are left behind, and gaps are persisting, sometimes widening. Human security focuses on individuals, not just economic figures that do not always reflect reality on the ground. Outbreak of Ebola, growing number of refugees, internally displaced persons in Middle East, truly requires human security approach. And our third basic policy is to put emphasis on self-reliant development. We need to give food, water, medical services, etc., to those who are on the verge of collapse. But our assistance could not and should not continue eternally in that way. Rather than giving just people fish, we need to tell them how to catch fish and maybe eventually help them create income-generating fishery industry. Development cooperation should be something more than charity. We need to promote capacity building, sharing our experience, good or bad, so that people in developing countries can stand on their own feet and move forward. And also we need to address diversified development challenges. Let me touch upon just two top priority areas of cooperation and the new charter. Number one, quality growth. We need to aim at achieving quality growth through our development cooperation. Poverty eradication remains the main purpose of economic development, but so that poverty be continuously eradicated, economic growth is indispensable. But growth should not be just a matter of economic figure, such as GDP or GDP per capita. Growth we need to attain is one that benefits as many people as possible, so inclusiveness, gap narrowing. And the growth we need to attain should be environmentally and socially sustainable, sustainability. Growth should pay due attention to the environment and to the social impact that might be brought about. There are quite a few experiences, good or bitter, ones Japan can share with others. And growth should enhance resilience of the community or society. Communities should become more resilient against impacts such as natural disaster. So quality growth is something we traditional donors should pursue, wishing other emerging donors to join. Number two, for the economic development to continue and for many people to enjoy fruits of growth, peace, stability of the society, peace and stability of the society is a prerequisite. We need to facilitate promoting universal values, rule of law, basic human rights, democratization, good governance, and so forth. Law enforcement capabilities should be also enhanced. We have helped and are helping a number of countries in making civil codes, criminal code, economic-related laws, or in capacity building by dispatching experts or accepting trainees. And in the field of law enforcement, training of law enforcement officers, provision of equipment such as communication facilities, or in some cases patrol vessels, are some examples of our cooperation. And in order to achieve tangible results in priority areas, as I mentioned, traditional ODA is not sufficient, especially in filling gaps, infrastructure gap that is constituting a bottleneck for development and growth. An amount of 2.5 or 3 times as much as ODA is flowing into developing world, as I said, from private sector. So we need to think how we can make the best use of non-ODA resources for the development of the world, and need to think how we can utilize ODA as a catalyzer to induce private resources into the field of development in an appropriate manner. Our traditional approach was to prepare appropriate investment climate by promoting capacity building and providing basic economic infrastructures. But some countries have progressed more and wish to bring in private money through PPP, public-private partnership. So, of course, we can help PPP through legal framework making. assistance or by facilitating interested government to invest in a special purpose vehicle, SPV or SPC, by offering back financing or viability gap funding. And given the huge infrastructure demand all over the world, Asia in particular, we should pull together our efforts and innovative ideas to make a breakthrough in this area as well. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I just try to give a brief sketch of a new charter that indicates a new framework for our actions in the field of development cooperation. In concluding my remarks, I should like to quote two Japanese maxims. One is, "Komatta toki wa otagai sama," that means friend in need is friend indeed. Another one is, "Nasake wa hito no tame narazu," charity is a good investment. So those two ideas reflect two sides of the same coin, and these ideas are enshrined in the preamble of Japanese constitution that goes, quote, "We desire to occupy an honored place in an international society striving for the preservation of peace and the banishment of tyranny and slavery, oppression and intolerance for all time from the earth. We recognize that all peoples of the world have the right to live in peace, free from fear and want. We believe that no nation is responsible to itself alone, but that laws of political morality are universal," unquote. Well, new charter clearly maintains our firm commitment to this basic idea and tries to cope with diversified development challenges we are facing. Thank you so much.
Morning. I had nothing to do with ODA when I was asked to chair the expert meeting to draft, the basis of ODA charter. And this is the new ODA charter. But I was an expert on science and technology policy for 9 years at the government. I was political appointee to make Japanese science and technology policy with the budget. That budget is 10 times bigger than ODA budget. So I have to talk about structure of ODA in terms of statistics. So not the concept. Concept, I'm very good at the concept and philosophy of ODA charter. But roughly speaking, ODA money grew up so steeply in the beginning. And because of, our primary balance, the deficit of the income of the government, the taxpayers, our income, and spending, too much spending. So primary balance. So ODA suffer from declining so sharply, very so sharply. And then because of good effort of the foreign ministry of talking about ODA and the JICA's sincere effort to help those poor people, poor state. Then, as long as ODA money stay so far, but like a pyramid, went up so steeply and went down. And so, in the beginning of 1992, when we got the first ODA charter, and after that, we decline. Okay? And just a rough, figure, maybe Japanese yen went down. So, this is a very rough figure. And the 1997, we had a peak of pyramid of the budget, $11.7 billion at that time. Now we have $5.5 billion. So it's a decline. So that's why we need partnership to bring up you know, the other, you know, money sources. Statistics said, because all globally speaking, 2.5 times bigger private money are funneled to the developing country with a couple of the, you know, ODA. So this is a very important statistic. So we need the partnership with the private, you know, activity. Also, we have the national security, you know, argument, and also Japan-backed argument. We have to cooperate with them. So ODA New Charter very strongly said ODA is the catalyst to bring up. So partnership is so important, as Ishigane pointed out. That's first thing. And second, you know, statistics is, you know, 75% of very poor people live in the middle successful state. This is what called the middle trap. How could we do this, you know? So just praying, you know, the poverty to bring up, but it didn't work. So we needed a concept, you know, the philosophy. So we started this philosophy of inclusiveness, bring up, include poor people in the middle successful people, state. So it is easy to, you know, fund the money to very poor country, but the serious problem, the core of the problem is different. Inclusiveness is, so international community are starting argument that the United Nations post-2015, you know, MDGs. You know. So we have to cooperate with that, those, you know, international argument, right? And so, 70%, so don't forget the statistics, 70% of poor people live in the middle successful state. How could we do this? So governance, rule of law, and we have to touch and the concept of inclusiveness and sustainability and the resilience. There are a lot of economic slump and suffer from the, you know, weak state economically. So we have to help them not to be, you know, non-resilient. So we put the importance of idea is let them to be resilient. So international community is discussing this one. That's the one thing. Okay? So it's my, you know, presentation is so short. So, but strong, you know. Okay? And historically, as Ishigane pointed out, we marked historical statistics. We got the 70 years when we are defeated and bring up a peaceful state. So, Constitution preface, you know, said two hypotheses. Japan's survival and prosperity are due to goodwill of international community. That's the basis of ODA. And the second, you know, argument or preface of Japanese constitution says, there are a lot of people suffering from tyranny and poverty. This is the basis of ODA. So Japan has to help those people. That's our commitment. And so this is ODA. That's why ODA and the human security is our security. Not that, you know, military, because Japan have to be secured if we help human security in the other area. So this is a, you know, logical argument. Okay? And new evolution. my assistant here, sitting here, gave me a lot of logical argument, you know, because catalysis is a very important word. And also, we face the changing global world, expanding and becoming more complex. And so how could do this, you know, ODA is the same ODA? So we argued the philosophically, logically, statistically, and by the same, you know, outline of 11 years ago, the previous, you know, we didn't, you know, create our own. We followed the previous argument, you know, structure of ODA argument, philosophy, the basic, you know, but so we changed a lot from supporting the previous, you know, structure of ODA argument. So we are not discarding all the, you know, previous one. We are very much, you know, honest in following that. So all newspapers said, no. Yakushiji's, you know, new report are very hawkish. No. I am hawkish, but what I organized the report is very soundly healthy, not the hawkish. And so inclusiveness, so we how we can get those people included in the middle state? So my argument is governance and rule of law is so important for them. So we pay ODA for the even military people who are doing, helping, bringing poor people back, and also non-military conduct. So Asahi Shimbun and others all criticize me. I'm happy. So that is the general argument. And also, basis of the argument is very much simple and articulated and conceptual, logical. We have to, again, ODA is a catalysis because of primary balance. Money is not growing. The money is not, but money is very important. But we have to bring the other, you know, theoretical argument like government policy, government, you know, or ODA, you know, security policy talked a lot about ODA. And so you have to read it. This is not a hawkish, you know, statement. So this is the part of the drives of ODA, as long as I'm concerned. I'm not representing whole argument for this time argument. But behind that, we structures very logically and conceptually. And please read it. Thank you very much.
Good morning. I'm Hiroshi Kato, Vice President of the Japan International Cooperation Agency. I first of all would like to convey the apology of my boss, Mr. Tanaka, President of the Japan International Cooperation Agency, who wanted to come to this occasion very much, but due to his other engagements, he couldn't make it. And when I asked him, Mr. Tanaka, what I should tell to the Washington audience on his behalf, he said to me, well, you can say whatever you like, but you have to tell the audience that everything you say is your personal view and not necessarily represent the official view of the Japanese aid agency. So what I'm going to tell you is my personal opinion and not necessarily represent the view of Mr. Tanaka or the organization itself. But I'd like to share some of the views that I have as a development practitioner working in Japan for Japanese ODA or development cooperation more broadly. Well, I expect that the fundamental question that you might be expecting to understand from my presentation is how Japanese ODA in practice will be changed, will be affected by the introduction of the new development charter, development cooperation charter. Well, as I said, as I see it, and as my previous speakers have talked about, the idea of the new development charter is to articulate what Japan has been practicing or Japan has been adhering to in a systematic manner. And as such, I don't see the introduction of the new development cooperation charter will bring about a drastic change in the operation of Japan's ODA or JICA's operation for that matter. However, what we have been intensifying in the recent years must be intensified with the introduction of the new development cooperation charter. So I'd like to talk about some of the things that I believe will be intensified in the coming years. And in that context, I'd like to talk about the role of ODA as a catalyst, which Mr. Ishikane emphasized in his presentation. The fundamental premises of the new Development Cooperation Charter of Japan, I believe, comprises several contentions. Number one, the international community needs to mobilize whatever resources it needs to deal with the ever-increasing and ever-changing global challenges. And those resources might include not only financial resources, but also intangible resources such as knowledge, expertise, and know-hows. And premise number two, ODA remains to be an important mechanism through which resources are mobilized, but ODA alone will not be sufficient to satisfy the global needs. And premise number three, and therefore other sources than ODA must be tapped into. And number four, ODA must be playing a catalytic role in mobilizing resources other than ODA. I believe that this worldview, or view of international cooperation, is very convincing and can be accepted almost globally. And my contention today is that that view of the need for the mobilizing whatever resources we might have at our disposal, and that ODA must play a catalytic role, is very relevant, particularly relevant to the Japanese context. And in other words, there are a number of factors that make this structure of international cooperation possible and necessary in the Japanese society. So let me touch on these factors one by one. First of all, luckily, I think the Japanese ODA system has evolved in such a way that ODA is playing a catalytic role is possible. Japanese ODA system was always often criticized as overly fragmented or fragmented and lacking in guiding principles and leadership. And that is, unfortunately, a thing of the past. We now have a fairly streamlined ODA system, starting from the top at the prime minister level down to the implementation level. We have a strong leadership of Mr. Abe, and we have a mechanism at the governmental level to coordinate various interests of various actors. And the coordinating role of the Foreign Affairs Ministry on international cooperation has been intensified. And importantly, if not most importantly, at the implementation level, we have a streamlined system. Now we have a unified JICA, which was came to existence as a result of a merger of our two then existing organizations, OECF or JBIC, and Japan International Cooperation Agency. Now JICA has an operation budget of more than $10 million and covering a wide range of activities, starting from loans, grants, technical cooperation, volunteers, NGO development, and emergency relief, human resource development, and infrastructure development. JICA is the largest bilateral aid organization in the world. When the two organizations were being merged in 2008, some people said that is it okay to have such a huge organization covering a huge wide spectrum of activities? Well, in my view, the merger turned out to be a very successful one. We now have one single major ODA implementing agency, and Mr. Ishikane doesn't have to talk to a variety of presidents of various implementing organizations. He now all he has to do is to talk with Mr. Tanaka on important issues on international development. So now, I think we have a very good system where ODA can play a catalytic role for various stakeholders that might be interested in international development cooperation. Number two, there are a huge needs in the Japanese society for ODA to play such catalytic roles. For example, the private sectors, faced with a shrinking population in Japan, the private sectors, if they want to survive in the 21st century, must reach out into the markets in developing countries, especially in Asia and growing economies like in Africa. But they have insufficient information and knowledge about such areas, and they need some support from the ODA in terms of information or knowledge or human networks. And even universities must internationalize themselves if they are to survive in the 21st century, faced with international competition, global competition, and declining number of children in Japan. So there are a huge needs for the Japanese entities to internationalize themselves, and in that respect, ODA can play a role. And number three, I believe maybe this is a kind of view bias on the being a Japanese citizen, but we believe that Japanese society has a lot to offer for the development of international community. For example, energy-saving technologies accumulated in small and medium-sized enterprises in Japan can offer a great deal to countries suffering from energy crisis. Or local governments which have accumulated a huge amount of expertise on sewage system or a public health system might offer a lot of knowledge and the know-how to local governments in developing countries. So my basic premises, one of the premises behind the Japanese New Development Charter is that Japan has a lot to offer for the benefit of development practitioners working in poorer countries, or not only poorer countries, but in middle-income countries. And finally, the world of international development has changed. In the 1970s and 80s, Japan used to employ an attitude which is called request basis principle. That means the Japanese government waits till the official requests are made by the partner countries on project for implementation or human resources development, kind of passive attitude. But we no longer believe that that kind of passive attitude is effective in today's world. There are hundreds, thousands, and millions of workers, entities, willing to participate in the international development activities. Private firms, NGOs, and local governments and universities around the world are now competing for their acceptance of their ideas, knowledge, and expertise. Well, if Japan wants to remain relevant in the international development scene, I believe that we need to be more proactive in appealing what we have to offer to them and what kind of expertise and know-how and technology we can offer for the development of the international community. So I think this kind of proactive attitude is also one of the things that is highlighted in the new development charter. So for overall, I have talked about how the important that the ODA could play in the coming decades, and that is a catalytic role in tapping into the resources which are currently dormant in the Japanese society. So that is one of the things that we are going to intensify with the introduction of the new development charter. There are other things that I'd like to talk about, like the quality of growth and human security and other things, but I may discuss these matters in the question and answer session. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you so much. I think that was a terrific set of presentations. They have fleshed out so many issues that we now are going to get into more detail. So I would like to start asking the panelists a few general questions. They're not directed to just one of you, but whoever wants to share an opinion, that would be very welcome. And then, of course, I want to bring you all into the conversation, and we'll have an opportunity for Q&A from the floor. So I want to start by talking about some of the novel elements that have generated a lot of attention and, as Professor Yakushiji was saying, some of them debate. And I think that one of the issues that has really generated a lot of discussion is this new provision whereby foreign militaries, when they're carrying out non-military operations, could be recipients of Japanese aid. And I think this very much, you know, realizes, it shows a realization that the military can play a very productive role in situations such as disaster relief, in situations where we have infectious diseases like the Ebola outbreak that we just experienced, and also in post-conflict reconstruction efforts. But I think that the critics would argue, and this is where I would like to get you to address this possible source of criticism, the critics would argue that money, after all, is fungible. And therefore, that when you are helping, you know, foreign militaries to carry out these very important tasks, nevertheless, indirectly, Japan could help these militaries as they develop the more traditional areas of operation. So I wonder if any one of you would like to address this concern and to give us an idea of why we shouldn't be worried that this could indeed be a result. And I understand that the charter envisions that each instance of giving aid to foreign militaries will be done on a case-by-case basis. So if you could discuss what criteria will be used before that decision is made, who in government will make that decision. And I imagine that many of these situations would actually be emergency situations in case of post-disaster emergency relief. So how can you do this in a very quick manner? Ishikani, Ambassador Ishikani, thank you.
Yes. Well, actually, you know, what has been pretty much discussed by Japanese media and international media as well is this, you know, avoidance of any military use of ODA. The stipulation goes like this. Japan will avoid any use of development cooperation for military purposes or for aggravation of international conflict. This is the sentence which we had in the current, you know, a former ODA charter. And we added another sentence here. In case the armed forces or members of the armed forces in recipient countries are involved in development cooperation for non-military purposes, such as public welfare or disaster relief purposes, such cases will be considered on a case-by-case basis in light of their substantive relevance. So first of all, I have to say, you know, which those activities or those, you know, ODA-related activities which had not been possible under the former ODA charter because of this, you know, first sentence of non-use for military purposes or aggravation of international conflicts, that sort of activities will not be allowed in the new charter. No. As she just rightly pointed out, given the, you know, situation where the, you know, role of the military is growing in terms of, say, infectious disease control or disaster management or disaster relief, we thought it appropriate to write it down in a proper manner, how we can cooperate with military organization as an organization or military personnel to conduct that sort of, you know, development-related activities. The point is, as she said, well, the money is fungible, so there is always a risk that the money to be, you know, invested in a military organization or personnel be used for other military purposes. But first point is that that point is not inherent in the new ODA charter. The same thing could happen in the former charter. If you construct the bridges or ports and so forth, who can assure that, you know, that, you know, bridge or road will never be used by, you know, military in times of emergency? So this is not something inherent in the new charter. But of course, I shouldn't say we are not worrying about it, but we continue to be cautious. So when we try to extend our military ODA assistance to military organization or military purposes, we need to think about to whom we are extending, the nature to whom we are extending our cooperation, and what is the real nature of the activity which that organization or personnel will be, you know, implementing. And also we need to think about the governance of the country, if that kind of money will not be, you know, used for other purposes and so forth. And if there remains still some kind of, you know, doubts on something, we will try to have some exchange of notes or some other document by which we try to, you know, safeguard the non-use of ODA for non-military purposes. So number one, this is not inherent. But number two, we need to be cautious. So this is my answer.
Very good. Very interesting.
You know, I'm a political scientist. You know, when you look at the Diet Committee's argument of the foreign policy, there are a series of arguments not to go beyond giving ODA for those who are making mass destruction weapons like a missile and others, and the focus on the kind of environmental point. You know, competitively, you know, repeatedly, they have argued. So we follow that, as he said. But as I said before, how could you bring up non-included people? How could do this, you know? And then we have to carefully, judge whether or not we spend ODA. But we are very careful because already political decisions are made not to give money or military people to make missile and war destruction. Everybody knew that, you know. So we are not going beyond that. So carefully, you know, decide whether or not they are doing a civilian, you know, activity. And so we wrote this. But the media forget, you know, that we wrote very carefully not to go beyond, you know, but the importance. And so my comment is.
Thank you so much. Very interesting answers. And let me then move to the next issue. Because another very important innovation is that Japan will now give aid to ODA graduate countries. That is, countries that are above a certain income threshold, which I think is something like $12,000, almost $13,000. This new target is justified on the based on specific vulnerabilities. And I have to say that prior to listening to your presentations, I was going to ask why focus on those vulnerabilities and not others. But I think that Professor Yakushiji made it very, very clear that if you have 70% of the poor in these countries that are doing relatively so-called better, it does merit the target of, you know, to serve the needs of these people who are in desperate need. But what I think this raises is the possibility that if Japan begins to target these countries that are ODA graduates, then the share that least developed countries receive perhaps will go down. And we already know that Japan, the average that Japan gives to LDC countries already below what OECD donor countries gives. So I think my question to you is, do you think that the international community, the international donor community, should move to Japan's side on this issue and then realize that perhaps we should have a broader criteria for identifying countries that merit aid? Or how do you think, in general, that the OECD donor community will react to this change in Japanese ODA philosophy and principles?
Well, I think it's the other way around. It's not, you know, other, you know, OECD donor countries approaching Japan. We are approaching other OECD donor countries because, you know, unlike United States or UK or French, France or other, you know, traditional donor countries, the only pocket Japanese government has to use for, you know, cooperation is ODA. And other government has other pockets. So we've been quite faithful in the, you know, definition of DAC, DAC definition. And that seems, that means, you know, most of the cooperation which we have extended to other countries were in line with the DAC definition. But other countries in the United States, France, and Germany could extend, you know, kind of cooperation to many countries, not limited to the DAC-listed countries. But we didn't do that. We are quite faithful in the DAC definition. So this time we have changed that too. So that means we are approaching to other, you know, other DAC member states.
For the sake of argument, I said I had nothing to do with ODA, but I had something to do with ODA for many years, you know, because I started helping developing countries in five areas: infectious disease, including Ebola, and environment, and energy, and natural disaster, preservation of natural species. And this is what we call science and technology diplomacy, bringing science and technology budget and couple of ODA. The ODA side of JICA is helping us because the JICA is given the 1/3 of ODA amount to JICA, you know, for activity. So this is already, you know, 80 years around, you know, helping developing country with the science and technology using ODA, bringing them to Japan to study, like infectious disease area. And so I think, you know, you are talking about the precious tangible money, but the bringing with other budget, we can develop, you know, very sincere, you know, new area of the using the different budget. But the concept is the science and technology diplomacy. So science and technology in Japan is still okay, but use the strengths and, you know, part coupled with the ODA. So this is a new approach. And so I think we are some pitfall questions. Only ODA. Only you look at this, as I said, the size of ODA, very precious. But the idea is very poor, you know, when you talk about it. We cooperate with others. That is, ODA is a catalysis, you know. Catalysis. We wrote that in the catalysis, ODA catalysis, you know. The bringing others.
Thank you, Vice President.
Yeah, a quick comment. Dr. Soy said that Japanese ODA, majority or the larger portion of Japanese ODA goes to middle-income countries. Well, on the aggregate figure level, that might be true. But if you look at the different modalities of Japanese ODA, the Japanese government places different priorities to different categories of countries. For example, for grant aid and technical cooperation, Africa takes the lion's share vis-a-vis other regions of the world like Asia, South Asia, and Southeast Asia, and North and Latin America. So, and the trick is that Japan provides a huge amount
of loans, and that kind of overshadows other modalities' priorities. But if you look at different modalities of Japanese ODA, I think there is a very careful consideration as to what kind of money should be allocated to certain different categories of countries, and I think that policy will be strong, maintained even after the introduction of the new charter.
Thank you. Very interesting. So let me ask you my last question so that the audience has plenty of opportunity to ask questions of you. And I would really recommend all of you to read the new charter. It's really a very well-polished, interesting, compelling document. So my question really derives from reading the introduction, the first section of the charter, because I think it makes a very good assessment of the multiple challenges that we face in this period of turmoil in international affairs. For example, it makes reference to transboundary risks, such as food crisis and infectious diseases, threats to peace and stability because of piracy and terrorism, and humanitarian crisis in fragile states. And the idea is that Japan is stepping up its global engagement through development cooperation precisely to address these challenges. But of course, the flip side of this greater engagement is that Japan may also be more directly affected by this international crisis. And I think everyone's views here that we are very deeply saddened by the tragic and barbaric killing of Japanese hostages just recently. And of course, we applaud the position of Prime Minister Abe to never give in to international terrorism. But I am sure that these events have shaken Japanese society. So my question is not about government policy, but about views among the Japanese public regarding support for the more strategic use of ODA. So my question is, do you think that the recent hostage crisis in any way undermine public support for the more strategic use of aid, or do you think that on the contrary, it created this sense that internationalism, activism, this kind of commitment is the only way forward? How do you read Japanese reaction regarding humanitarian aid in hotspots of the world on the aftermath of this very sad set of events?
Well, regarding that particular, issue, it was a quite sad incident, and we can never, allow those kind of barbaric acts for any reason whatsoever. Of course, there are, in a country like Japan, there are many sorts of opinion. There are those who said, they firmly, support the Japanese government stance in that, we should never give in the terrorists. Activities. We should continue our, humanitarian assistance and retracting or shrinking our humanitarian assistance in front of that sort of challenges will be just giving in terrorism and giving an excuse for those terrorist activities to move forward. But of course, there are some other, opinions which goes that we should be a little bit more cautious in, at least in expressing how expressing to the outer world about the cooperation which we are extending. But I think my overall assessment, I think this is my personal assessment, but overall assessment is that strategic use of humanitarian assistance still, or having a growing, number of support from the general public. As a matter of fact, when we look at some opinion polls conducted in Japan, the number of people who is becoming supportive of Japanese ODA assistance because of its strategic use is on the rise. So this is the overall trend. I think this is in part due to the very difficult, constrained Japanese budgetary situation, so they wish the money be used in a strategic manner. So this is overall trend. And how this, current recent tragic incident could have impact upon this overall trend remains to be seen. But I think all in all, my reading is that, the people will support this sort of humanitarian assistance, even though we had went through, we had gone through that sort of tragic event.
So much. So I think that the audience has been very patient, and it's time to bring them to the conversation. So if you can please raise your hand, identify yourselves, please ask a short, concise question, wait for the mic to arrive, and I'll take two questions at a time just to make sure that we have plenty of time, for plenty of opportunity for everybody to participate. So this lady here.
Thank you. Raylene Campbell with the United Nations Foundation. And maybe sort of piggybacking on your comment, my question is kind of overall PR around what Japan has done over the last 60 years, echoing Ambassador Ishikane's comment that Japan has done a lot to be very proud of. And I think Vice President Kato said it well, that Japan isn't necessarily changing what it's going to be doing, but articulating better what it is doing and why it's doing and why it's important to be doing this. But I was struck by two things, I guess, in the talks, and that's the lack of two words in any of the comments, innovation and impact. Coming from the Gates Foundation very recently, those are the two words that are the focus of conversations around ODAs and a lot of the ODA reviews taking place in different countries around the world. But to be honest, Japan has been very much at the forefront of innovation and impact, but does not articulate that well. And just to cite a couple of quick examples, and in full confession, I was involved in two of them. The partnership on polio on the global front, Japan has been one of the leading contributors over the last couple of decades to bring the number of polio cases down from 350,000 to about 300, I don't know what the exact number is now. And then most recently, a partnership with the Gates Foundation, the Nigerian government, has reduced cases to zero in Nigeria over the last 6 months, and potentially eliminating polio from that continent. The other example that I was involved in was a partnership on the research and development front around medicines and vaccines and other things for infectious diseases affecting the third world, the Global Health Innovation Technology Fund. And I think what is lacking is really the PR around that, and helping not just the external world, but helping Japanese people know the impact that Japan is having with the investments it's making. The third example is the maternal and child health handbooks that very few mothers in the developing world where JICA has introduced them are not familiar with them. You look in Indonesia where it was adopted by the government, and there's talk about inclusiveness and sustainability, and I think that's a wonderful example of an investment that Japan made that is having long-term payoffs.
Thank you. So that had a lot of elements. Maybe you should answer that, and then before we move to the next question, if you have any comments.
Well, I think, you know, you talked about is how we can assure a kind of effectiveness in terms of the impact and development cooperation maximally utilizing the money. Well, I think this here, what is important is how we can cooperate with the private sector and other sectors, which has an enormous expertise in many ways. And one thing is, is a long conversion system, which we had worked with the Gates Foundation. And also there is another, example, which is named JIHIT, where there is, kind of cooperation between Japanese private sector and public sector to fund, collect money to fund, the development of new medicines, which could be used for the, immunization process and so forth. But also, if we talk about the innovation, the PPP and that sort of things is also an innovation, which is gradually underway in many parts of the world. On the ground, there are so many countries which are talking about the PPPs, but so far the PPP, which is quite successful, is just limited to, independent power producers. So how we can make it possible in other fields is another challenge, and this is also requires a lot of innovative ideas and so forth.
Very, very quickly, universal health coverage is Japan has been emphasizing, as you're familiar with. But recently, we created NIH type of organization starting April. We call it AMED. My project on infectious disease part will be transferred to them. So ODA and medical scientists and, you know, the people working together to develop. And so this is the kind. So the Gates Foundation might be working on a very, you know, effortly. So we have to, you know, let them, you know. So new NIH type of argument is, it's also related to ODA. Yeah.
Just quick, if I made an impression that we're not giving an emphasis on innovation, that was my mistake. And the reason why JICA wants to play a more catalytic role in the future is to encourage more innovation. And by playing a catalytic role, we can invite actors which have been alien to international development cooperation, like the small-scale industries, or the local governments, and even universities. And those are the sources of innovation. And number two, having said that, the private sector and the research institutions are the major sources of innovation. We contend that even the public sector actors can bring in a lot of innovations. For example, Japan stresses the importance of Kaizen, or improvement, which means continuous improvement of day-to-day activities. And that's a small, you know, accumulation of small innovations leading up to substantial improvement in society's organizations, ability, performance, and so forth. So innovation is indeed an important keyword, and we need to be encouraging more innovative activities in the future. And as Mr. Ishikane said, well, we need to be innovative ourselves, not only preaching in what others say, to be more innovative. So we have to think of other new innovative ways of delivering our assistance, like PPP is one example, but in a partnership with a different organization like the Bill Gates Foundation and maybe private sector partnership. That is one of the fields that we need to be more innovative ourselves. Thank you for raising the question.
So, Glenn?
Glenn Fukushima with the Center for American Progress. I'm not a specialist in ODA, but my friends who are tell me that one of the factors behind the rethinking of this new charter has to do with the role of China. And I wondered if you could talk about how this new charter more effectively deals with China. Obviously, not so much as a recipient of aid as it is in the past, but rather as a competitor in the sense that there does seem to be concern among some circles in Japan about China's involvement in Asia, Latin America, and Africa. And so how does this new charter deal more effectively with that issue, number one? And related to that is I understand recently in Asia there's more discussion of cooperation among Asian countries in providing aid. For instance, discussions between South Korea and China in cooperation in providing aid. Your talks have been primarily about Japan and bilateral, but what is your view about Japan's partnerships with other countries in providing aid? Thank you.
Let me take two more questions just to make sure that we have time to address. So this lady and then this gentleman. The lady over there.
Good morning. I'm Joanna Nesseth. I'm with Chevron, which is an energy company. And I just wanted to mention two things. The first is to acknowledge the role that Japan and JICA have played around agricultural development over the past decades. When most of the world walked away from the issue, you have been so committed to research and development and technical capacity building. It's been very valuable, and I hope it will continue. I have a question around the partnership agenda and the role of the private sector. We've been engaged with dozens of partnerships with USAID. We've co-invested in very significant ways. But I think over the course of the past decade, we've seen that taking on this agenda is difficult. It requires both changes in your technical mechanisms in terms of procurement policy and your legal reviews and your strategy approaches. And it also takes changes in the way your foreign service officers think and work with the private sector. And you may not have gotten to some of these mechanisms yet, but I'm curious to know if you have started to think about this, or as you do start to think about how this will roll forward, would love to just hear how that process is evolving, because it will be, I'm sure, an evolution.
And this gentleman.
Hello. I'm a Korean student from the George Washington University, and my question will be a little bit sensitive. And even though, I mean, it says that utilizing the military service is for non-military use, but it seems like expanding the role of Japanese self-defense forces, which was supposed to protect Japan itself rather than like outside of Japan. So, and in my opinion, it might affect the interpretation of the Japanese peace constitution, and by making a precedent that Japan once intervened in this kind of, I mean, foreign affairs. So I want to ask you your opinions about this issue, like interpretation of the Japanese constitution about the military forces.
That might be a little bit out of the scope, but whatever you want to answer from the original questions.
Let me briefly explain what I created, science and technology diplomacy. It's called the SATREPS, it's called the Science and Technology Partnership Program. And so, as, agriculture case and others, some JICA people are very knowledgeable, but in terms of science and technology capability, we, judges, policy with the JICA. So we are always quarreling between the scientists and the engineer and the JICA people. Because JICA had the very much, a deep, penetration of the agriculture and others. They are very, very much, worried about their own, capability of losing. So science and technology is a kind of necessary condition, not the sufficient condition. JICA, bring with the JICA, then we get the new, approach to the, sufficient condition. But the science and technology, argument is the first necessary argument, but it's not the sufficient argument. So with the JICA people, we have to do agriculture and the medical things, medical defense and others. So this project is, is going quite well. But it's always, some of the experts of the JICA criticize. So I forget, so this is the kind of quarrel, between the scientists and the JICA evaluation of the area.
Yeah. Well, if I may, I'd like to answer the question raised by Graham Fukushima. Well, how we... the China issues, related to the new charter. Well, of course, this charter has, is not really targeting any country. But China is an emerging donor. So one thing which we would like to, achieve is bringing, those emerging donor in line with some, rules or norms which the countries have established for such a long time. Those norms and principles have reasons to be there because we've gone through not only Japan but other, traditional donors have gone through many bitter experiences, in terms of environmental sustainability or social sustainability and so forth. And out of those, bitter experiences, we have come up with a set of norms and so forth. So One of the, you know, major fields, a major objective of our ODA cooperation, which is enshrined in the current charter, is quality growth. And quality growth, you know, means sustainability and inclusiveness and resilience and so forth. So these are the things which we'd like to attain. This is a growth which we'd like to attain, not just, you know, pushing up the GDP per capita or GDP as a figure. So these, if we'd like to attain growth through our economic cooperation, that growth should be of something of a high quality. So this is something we would like to, you know, share with other emerging donors. So in that sense, you know, of course, and I should say, you know, fairly speaking, you know, Chinese, you know, cooperation and cooperative activities are really learning many things quite quickly in many parts of the world. Of course, there are many complaints which we could hear in Africa or in other parts of the world, but still, they are learning very quickly and they are doing, in some parts of the world, very good jobs. But here, what we would like to do is not just, you know, speaking ill of the Chinese, but also what we need to do is setting our standard, our high-quality growth standard. And maybe we should talk about high-quality infrastructure as well. And this is what we need to do. And on this particular, on this, you know, stance, we need to interact with emerging donors. So in that sense, China comes into a new charter. And about bilateral cooperation or multilateral cooperation, yes, I think this is a very important point, and we have inserted certain phrases in the new charter. Traditionally, our assistance has been mainly on bilateral basis, but we'd like to expand that horizon, and we would like to put more emphasis upon the regional approach. And this is something I learned as an ambassador to ASEAN. ASEAN is integrating and trying to get, you know, together as a community. And this integration requires a regional approach, not just the bilateral basis approach. So we need to have this regional approach. And the same thing could apply to a certain extent in some part of Africa, northern part of Africa, eastern part, and southern part. So we definitely will be, you know, embarking upon this new approach of regional connectivity and so forth.
Just a quickly answer to the Glenn. When I organized the kind of expert meeting, I had nothing and no view about China, because China is wasting money, my argument, in Africa. And but our ODA has been very conscious, you know, for the basis on the constitutional, you know, argument, and also the kind of sincere approach and the declining money. So in terms of money, maybe they're different from Chinese. So that's why Asahi Shimbun, you know, wrote, you know, this is the kind of China basis, you know, and military use and things like that. Oh, shit, you know. And so I was nothing to do with that. I am proud of, you know, Sutless project. China has to learn, you know, science and technology diplomacy. Yeah.
Okay, so we have a couple of minutes left, so I'm so sorry, Vice President Kato, okay. And then I think she kind of sounded like
very quick. Quickly, mm-hmm. On cooperation to other donors, other than Indonesia, Turkey, and Mexico, Japan prides itself in support extending a long-term cooperation to those countries. And being a good donor is not an easy task. And Japan, as an latecomer as a development DAC member, we accumulated our experiences, know-how, how to be a good donor through trials and errors. And we have supported other countries, governments like Indonesia, Turkey, Mexico, and Brazil, and to accumulate the kind of know-hows and techniques as to be how to be effective in providing international cooperation. And as Mr. Mishkani mentioned, in a tripartite cooperation or triangular cooperation is one of the emphasis that we have been placing in terms of our development cooperation. Now, talking about the private partnership with the private sector, I don't know if I understood your question fully, but if we are, if a question is how Japan or JICA is trying to forge partnership with the private sector, We have several conditions that have to be satisfied if we are to forge a partnership with the private sector firm. One is that the private sector has a certain know-how, technology, and innovative products that could be useful for the development of the poorer countries. And number two, they are willing, actually, to be working for the developing country. And thirdly, very importantly, those private firms are not making the proposals only to make money. For example, if the project proposal made by a private sector firm is to benefit the rich, then JICA will not support such project proposals. So their proposal or project proposals must have a positive social externality, and that is one of the conditions that we impose on the proposals made by the private sector. So their willingness, their usefulness, and their positive social externality, those are the conditions that we request the private sector companies to propose to us.
Thank you very much.
If I may answer to the question raised by the Korean student regarding the interpretation of the Japanese constitution. Well, but I don't really see the relevance between the the debate over the constitution and this new charter. First of all, if we would like to extend more assistance to the military or military organization or military personnel which will be conducting non-military purpose or development related activities, most of the the object of assistance is a foreign military. And number two, yes, there is, there are occasions where a self-defense force could be dispatched as a rescue team for disaster management or disaster relief, or sometimes maybe infectious disease control purposes and so forth. So this is already, in place. This system is already in place, so this has nothing to do with the revision of the new our constitution. But we are also, trying to, sometimes have a better coordination of those self-defense force and some ODA. One example is what we are having in South Sudan. Our self-defense force is, doing some reconstruction work, and we are, assisting their activities by using our ODA money and so forth. But again, here, well, all those things. And a new element which are included in the new charter doesn't have much relevance with the discussion regarding the self-collective defense, the right of collective self-defense and others. So this is my answer.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This has been a terrific discussion. I think we can stay here all morning and continue to discuss these very interesting policies. But please join me in thanking the panelists for a terrific job today. Thank you.
Thank you.